The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everyone, this is Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And by our powers combined, we are the Canned Air Podcast. But right now, you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 192. And no matter if you're listening to this podcast in the morning, or in the afternoon, or the evening, I hope you are having a good one. And my guest for this episode is a gentleman that I met at Space. That's right, I mentioned on the last episode of the PVD Cast that I made some new friends when I was at Space, the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo, and this is one of them. Mr. Bruce Warden is going to be joining me. He is an illustrator and a comic book creator from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he sat down with me earlier this week via the phone, and we sat and talked about all of his different projects. And I gotta say, you're gonna hear about it in the actual conversation that we have, but I was really impressed with his one comic called One Drink. He got an opportunity to perform it at the after party for Space at Cafe Kerouac here in Columbus. And it just really spoke to me, and I don't wanna give away how it spoke to me. You'll hear that in our conversation, but Bruce is a pretty easygoing guy. It's a fun conversation, and I hope that you all are going to enjoy it. But before we get there, I would like to comment on one other thing, because I didn't get a chance to do so on the last episode. To be honest, I totally forgot about it, but I'm embarrassed to even say that I forgot about it, because it's such a good television program that I want to talk about, that by saying I forgot about it makes it sound like it's not memorable, and damn it, it's pretty memorable. I must tip my hat to Viceland, because their documentary series, Dark Side of the Ring, is amazing. Now, I've watched 4 of the 5 episodes. I haven't watched the most recent one, but all of them are really, really good. They all deal with the seedy side of professional wrestling, whether you're talking about the Montreal Screwjob, or you're talking about the relationship between Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth, the death of Bruiser Brody, or the curse of the Von Erichs. Those are the 4 that I've watched. They're all very well done. They're very entertaining. If you're a pro wrestling fan like I am, you need to get your hands on them. I know there's been some people that have told me, I don't get Viceland on my cable lineup. I don't know. You got to go find it somewhere. I think it's out there on YouTube. They have episode 1 up. I think you have to pay for the other episodes, but it's only like $1. It's damn well worth $1 to have access to Dark Side of the Ring. It's that good, ladies and gentlemen. Again, if you're a wrestling fan like I am, you need to check it out. Hands down, an awesome, awesome pro wrestling documentary series. So with that out of the way, let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVD Cast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their awesome service. And folks, I can tell you they have a catalog that is massive. As I mentioned, 180,000 titles. I guarantee they have a book for no matter what your interest is in, they got a book for it. So with that, to download your free audiobook today, all you got to do is go over to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'm back with Mr. Bruce Warden. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined on the line here tonight with Mr. Bruce Warden. Bruce, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So how you are currently in Michigan, correct? That's home base, correct?
Yep, Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor, I gotcha. And you are the man behind Black Market Books?
Yeah, that's the idea. I'm the man behind it. There's a few of us involved, but I'm a co-conspirator, I guess.
Is there any specific reason why you named your, I guess you could say, imprint Black Market Books? Is there something, is there a story behind that, or just you just like the sound of it?
I sort of like the sound of it, and was surprised. I looked around and didn't see any other distributors or publishers or anything with that name. And when I was starting it out, I didn't really have any idea what I was doing. I mean, I don't have any idea what I'm doing, but you know, it felt very appropriate because I was just basically slinging books by the dark of night, you know, trying my best, but not really having any idea what I was doing. So it's not a real deep meaning or anything, but I just thought it sounded cool. And I thought I could do a black and white logo, you know?
Yeah, there you go. So how long has Black Market Books been around?
It's been around, I've been publishing under Black Market Books for about six years now. Mm-hmm. But last year, so that was just me, you know, my self-publishing imprint, was Black Market Books. But last year I sort of expanded the company a little bit to do, distribution and not just publish my own stuff. So there's a handful of us up here in Michigan, that we've sort of banded together a little bit as Black Market Books, the distributor. So there's more, you know, more in the catalog than just my handful of books. A lot of good stuff by a lot of good people.
Okay, excellent. We'll talk about those here, but before we get too far along, I didn't get to ask you. We met last weekend at the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo, also known as SPACE. Mm-hmm. How was it for you this year?
It was pretty good this year. It's got its ups and downs, you know, for me, at any rate. It seems like every year is just a new, as far as sales go, it's a new experience. I love going down to space. I love the people. The community there is always really good, really welcoming, really friendly, really smart people. You know, that's always 100% consistent, but I never exactly know how I'm going to do sales wise down there. So this year was, not quite as good as last year, but last year was better than the year before. So it's ups and downs.
Sure,
and I'm not complaining about it. I did all right.
Sure, and I think that the general consensus for many people is you have that with conventions. Sometimes they you know, they go up and down, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your books. I'm going to start off with these first two for a specific reason, and I'll explain why in a few moments. But the first book that I wanted to talk about a little bit is Woodstock: 3 Days of Peace, Music, and Zombies. I assume from my research, this is the what happened if there was a zombie apocalypse during Woodstock?
Yeah, that's basically it. What if there was a zombie outbreak at Woodstock, but there was only a handful of people who could really tell the difference between stoned out hippies and shambling zombies that could save the day?
How did you decide to combine these two genres, if you want to call Woodstock like a genre, but how did you decide to combine these two?
Well, I've been working on Woodstock now for a number of years, and it was sort of started up right in the thick of the zombie crossover mania, you know, Pride and Prejudice and zombies, and there was kind of zombies in everything for a little while there, you probably remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I focus a little bit on rock and roll, classic rock and roll sort of stuff. It's my comfort zone, you know, as far as storytelling and I don't know, culture, pop culture stuff. You know, I'm more of a rock and roll guy. So it just kind of, I had done this other book called, Goodnight Keith Moon, which was also classic rock themed, Keith Moon from The Who. And a lot of people were kind of like, well, what's your next, you know, rock and roll picture book going to be, man? And I was like, hey, don't put me in a box. I don't know if I want to do just rock and roll picture books forever. But so So I did a couple other things, and then I was like, you know what? I think I kind of do want to do Rock of the Whole Picture Book. So just kind of sat down to figure out what I would want to do rock and roll wise, and we came upon the title Woodstock, zombies stalking Woodstock, and it was kind of like, oh my gosh, that's perfect, and sat down to write it, and the thing's just been writing itself. So I mean, I couldn't stop now if I really wanted to stop. It just keeps coming.
Well, I'm gonna put you on the spot. I don't want you to spoil the book for the listeners, so I'm gonna kind of take this question and tweak it a little bit. What modern day musical act would survive the zombie apocalypse in your opinion?
Modern day?
Yes. Yes.
I think Jack White would blend right in. So he would survive and no one would realize, the zombies wouldn't know he was alive and the humans wouldn't realize he'd survive. But I think he'd make it through. Jack White and the cockroaches.
There you go. Well, you mentioned Goodnight, Keith Moon, and which is your other rock and roll picture books. So music obviously is a big part of your life.
Yeah. That's the short answer.
Yep. Well, and I think go ahead if you'd like to expand a little bit on that.
I guess I'm not sure what to expand on. I'm not in a band. I don't play anything real well. I can, I know some chords on a guitar. I can fiddle around on a harmonica. I know where the keys are, where the notes are on a piano, but I don't really know how to play. I played in high school, played in the band in high school and a little bit in college, but I'm not a musician. And I'm not really like a scholar of, music or anything, but, there's something about just simple three chord type rock and roll. It just speaks to me, and like good, tight, poetic lyrics. And I don't know, music, it means a lot to me. I listen to it a lot while I'm working, while I'm drawing, so there's just music constantly in my ear. And it just seeps into your subconscious, if you leave it in your ear long enough, it just becomes part of you. So lots of different music has become sort of part of who I am, but I'm not sure what I do with it besides just draw cartoons about it.
Well, you did state, I read somewhere, where you are a huge Beatles maniac. So you're a huge fan of the Beatles, correct?
That's true.
So if you were to suggest a Beatles album, look, I'm going to be honest, Bruce. I know the Beatles tunes, the big ones, but I'm not a huge fan. What album would I start with in your opinion? Like which one would give me the best Beatles experience? Which album?
I'd have to ask you a couple of questions first to figure that out.
Sure, let's go. Beatles... Go ahead. Ask a few questions. We'll go ahead.
Beatles stuff it's generally split into, early and late Beatles, and they're very, very different. So when you say, you're somewhat familiar with the Beatles and you've listened to, you recognize some of the hits, like which songs are those that you
I think a lot of them.
Is it the stuff like Love Me Do and I Want to Hold Your Hand? Is it sort of simple, melodic, what's the stuff where they're singing in harmonies, Ticket to Ride, that kind of thing? Or is it the more psychedelic, like weird stuff later on, like I'm the
Walrus? It's early Beatles. Early Beatles is what I know most of, yeah.
Okay, well then, yeah, so that helps me narrow down what you would like. I wouldn't necessarily suggest Sgt. Pepper if you like early Beatles, but Sgt. Pepper is like kind of an amazing album if you're into that period. So early Beatles, if you like early Beatles, or you're interested in listening to early Beatles, I would recommend maybe Beatles for Sale. That I feel like that's a little bit of an overlooked, underappreciated Beatles album, and it's got some good covers on it, which it's always a good foot in the door for someone, right?
Okay.
To hear them singing some other songs that you may be familiar with in other ways. So
there you go.
Sale. That's my recommendation. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate that. I jotted that down on my post-it note here by my computer. So,
right.
Yeah, thanks. Now let's move along here into one of the other books that you had
here in Columbus at Space, and that actually you kind of, I'm going to say, performed it at the Space after party at Cafe Kerouac. It is a book called One Drink.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't say that I read it out loud, right? Because it's a wordless comic, so...
What was the inspiration behind that?
Behind the story?
Well, behind the story, and why did you decide to make it silent, so to speak?
Well, so the story, a little bit, just to summarize it a little bit for the listeners, it's about a couple of kids are sort of stuck in their parents' cars while their parents are inside a bar having a drink after work or whatever. So these kids are sort of not in the greatest situation, but they realize they're both in the same situation and they have a little moment of connection where they become friends. And they're each inside their parents' cars. And I just decided to not have them roll the windows down and talk to each other. So it's a little bit more of like a pantomime sort of introduction to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I made it wordless. It just felt like it would be more fun to see how these kids would become friends without speaking, you know?
Yeah.
Because it sort of emphasizes the distance between them a little bit, you know? Like they're in similar situations, but they're like physically inside two separate spaces and, you know, two separate lives and whatever, and you can still make a connection with someone like that. So the wordlessness sort of helps, I think, emphasize the distance between them and that they're bridging that distance in whatever ways they can, in, you know, by whatever means necessary in their situation, trying to bring a little control over their own lives into this situation where their parents are sticking them in a unsavory sort of situation.
And you know what, I just realized too, there's a small, for the listeners who didn't get to see your performance of it, there's a small little part where the one kid plays with the radio, mm-hmm. and there again, tying into your background with music as well, it just kind of clicked just a moment ago. I never even thought about that till you started talking about it. And yeah, so I personally really, really liked that one. I give you a lot of props on that. I thought that was very clever, and I liked it a lot. And, you know, for me, I think because I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan, and back in the day, they had that one issue that was just, in fact, I believe it's issue 21, where there's no words whatsoever, and it was just, to me, so innovative, you know. So I think that's my connection there in some weird way that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense maybe to you other people, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm not claiming that I invented the wordless comic, you know. I mean, you know, it's definitely part of a tradition, a storytelling trope or whatever that people try out for whatever reasons they have. Yeah, so no, that's cool. I like when different parts of people's lives connect in surprising ways. So the connection from this little heartfelt, wordless comic about two kids tying into, you know, your memories of an old G.I. Joe comic, that's pretty cool. That's cool. That's cool to me.
Well, let's talk about, speaking of pictures, you have, I don't know if they're still up and running, but you have two picto blogs.
Yeah. That's funny. I was just working on one of those today. I'm falling a little behind on it.
Okay. So, well,
you're calling me out on it, man.
Okay. Sorry, Bruce. The first one's called Homophones Weekly, and it's spelled, of course, W-E-A-K-L-Y. And then the other one's called Shoppers Unknown. So you want to explain a little bit about what those two blogs are like?
Sure. Okay. So there's a third one as well. So Homophones Weekly was a blog that I did quite a few years ago, 2011 through 16, something like that. I did it for about 5 years. I'd do a different drawing every week of, you know, two words that are spelled differently but sound the same. Two, two, and two, or like bear and bear, you know, B-E-A-R and B-A-R-E. Accept and accept, you know, things like that. And it just was a pretty straightforward grammar illustration blog, you know. It was a real simple black and white, almost like safety label drawings, you know, black and white stick figures, sort of acting out whatever the word is, the two words in the homophone pairs. And I did that every week for like 5 years, and it was like hundreds and hundreds of them. And then I got, you know, I didn't really run out. I still have a whole bunch that I could do, but they get harder and harder, mm-hmm. you know, as you leave the difficult ones to the end. So I kind of ran out of steam on it, stopped it for a while. And then, this past year, got noticed, internet noticed, you know, and got passed around through the aggregators,
Yeah, the cyberspace. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it made the rounds and got kind of noticed. So actually, Chronicle Books got a hold of me, and they're publishing it as a book this summer in August. It'll be coming out. We've got it all. We tweaked some of the art. You know, we picked the gems of the bunch. It's not every single homophone pair, but it's like 100 and it's over 100 of them. 100 pairs, and we added some color to it, so it's not just black and white, and we tweaked some of the art, and it's going to be really great, yeah. So,
well, congratulations on that. That's cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was pretty spectacular that it happened the way it happened in that weird internet way that it happened, you know. everything else, you just kind of, you toil away and self-publish or whatever and make the best of it, but that one, I had just let it lie dormant for a while, and it got rediscovered. So that felt pretty good, kind of, you know, affirming or whatever that I did something that people, you know, that resonated with people, mm-hmm. is useful to people. I get a lot of teachers and people email me about it and thank me for having such a exhaustive list of homophones and illustrations they can use in their class and stuff. And I made them into posters, so you can buy like a pack of posters of these things for your classroom, or you can wait for the book to come out and, you know, buy it for, you know, classroom full of students or just a teacher or whatever. So yeah, so Homophones Weekly, that's kind of a big story because it's still, you know, we're still waiting for the book to come out, and when it comes out this summer, that'll be another a great thing to promote for a while.
And you also had one called Shoppers Unknown where you found shopping lists and then kind of you came up with the idea of whose list it was, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I've collected shopping lists for a really long time, and I never really knew why. Well, I mean, I sort of knew why I liked them, but I never knew why I needed to have them, you know? But I find them all the time.
I'm just going to ask because I can't think of too many opportunities in my life where I've found someone's shopping list.
See, and to me, that's really, like, I get everybody's life is different, but I mean, I see shopping lists on the ground all the time, and I don't know how nobody else sees them. I found another one just the other day, just this past weekend, and it was like, it was in the bottom of a mud puddle, and I didn't pick it up, but yeah, I see them all the time. So I picked them up for a long time. I still pick them up from time to time now, but I picked them up for a really long time and saved them. And after a while, I was finally like, what if I sort of imagined the people who wrote these lists and then did just a little ink portrait of those people and then drew it on the back of the list and then, you know, presented the front and the back of the list side by side as a digital image, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all that one. And then I would transcribe. That's all the blog was just that, you know, the picture of the front of the list and a picture of the, you know, drawing of the person on the back of the list. And then I would try to transcribe the list out below it. So you could, because a lot of times they're really hard to read. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'd mm-hmm. try to figure them out so that you could at least scan through and see what was on the list or search for it on the blog by food item or whatever, you know, how many lists of carrots or cigarettes or whatever, you know, you got to type it in there so that you can search by it. And that was a lot of fun for me. In addition, it was just kind of a cool thing. I thought it was a cool thing to do, but also it gave me a chance to like sort of pay attention to people's clothing in a way that I normally don't. Mm-hmm. Like I would, you know, look at what people are like really wearing right now and take reference photos and things and make notes about fashion, I guess. I'm not really into fashion, but to my detriment, I'm not really into fashion. Like when I draw cartoons, like they just are inevitably wearing like a plain t-shirt and jeans, you know. It's I needed to up my game a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I'm paying attention to different styles and what that can bring to a drawn character, you know. So that was part of my goal for Shoppers Unknown for myself. It was never really explicitly stated on the blog or anything. I wasn't taking suggested challenges or anything like that. You know, we'll draw, this type of scarf or whatever, you know, a pea coat or whatever. I wasn't like a challenge like that. It was just something I wanted a reason to pay a little more attention to. So it helped me pay attention to that stuff and figure out how I can use fashion in my other cartoons a little bit. And also it was just an exercise in loosening up my inking, my ink work. So
So
it was
you
kind of
mentioned.
it was personal exercise, but also then dressed up as like a public sort of blog project, you know?
And you mentioned there you have a third blog as well?
Yeah, so I stopped that one after about a year. I felt like I had gotten, well, like I said, my personal goals out of it. I felt like I had gotten what I needed out of that, and I still have a whole bunch of shopping lists, but I needed to move on a little bit. So both the shopping one and the homophones one, I may, you know, I come, I step back to every once in a while and toss up a new one online just for fun. But it's not a regular weekly thing anymore. And I moved on to another one, a new little one, which I think is really fun, but I've lost a little bit of momentum on it as well. This is the one that I was working on today. It's called, so this is, all right, I'll tell you what it's called in just a second. This is a weekly blog where I'm just, it's another little illustration blog where I just try to do a new illustration on the theme or the series like every week. And it just helps, it's like a way to break down your workflow, you know, and makes if you've got a whole bunch of things you need to draw, it's like a time frame and it helps you be accountable. You know, you say, oh, well, every week I got to put a new one up. And then after, you know, like 50 weeks or whatever, you've got like 50 pages of a book or, you know, whatever your product is, your goal. So that's sort of why I'm doing it. The idea is that I wanted to do this little tiny book called, and it's called My Little Book of Sex Euphemisms.
Oh, that was on the list next, by the way. I was just gonna let you know. That was the next one on my list of notes.
Well, all right. So it's just going to be like a little tiny book, like 2 inches by 2 inches, with little drawings, like very, very simple, like Pusheen the Cat. You know, have you seen like Pusheen the Cat cartoons? Like those little, and what's that? Oh, I forget what it is. That little sleepy egg, like manga,
Oh
where it's got the little
yeah,
egg character, and he's
yes.
always kind of grumpy and sleepy. Well, and so I'm trying to do like a very, very simplified style like that, with just sort of cute little figures, kind of geometrical, but not like sharp edge, but just like very simple shapes, simple forms. And it's like a literal visual interpretation of euphemisms for sex. So like, you know, funny sayings. I don't know. The thing is, like, the euphemisms for sex are all pretty stupid, but
They
I
are.
thought they were. Yeah, but they're kind of funny if you think of them. For me, they're kind of funny if you think of them as like a literal thing. You know, as not a euphemism for sex anymore, but like riding a baloney pony is like that's just kind of a funny image. You know, and some of them are not that funny. You know, like whatever, like screwing and nailing and you know things like that. That's a pretty obvious. Like you know, you just draw. You know, a hand with and a screwdriver screwing in a screw. But sometimes they're, you know, like the beast with two backs and
Yeah,
things like
where did
that. Or,
I have to ask? I've never heard of that one. Where does that
that's
come
from
from and why?
Shakespeare.
Really? Okay.
That's I couldn't tell you which play it was from, but I know that it was Shakespeare. Shakespeare wrote that one. Yeah.
And I'm assuming because if you were involved in intercourse, the people would have two backs? I mean, like, I'm trying to figure that out.
You may the full phrase is you make the beast with two backs. So like when you
Oh, yeah, okay.
You become one beast, and yeah, you know.
Okay, gotcha.
All
right.
We don't want to stomp all over the joke by explaining it. So,
right.
Yeah.
My other one that I thoroughly enjoyed that I had never heard of either was Crashing the Custard Truck. That one made me almost fall off the couch laughing. I'm not gonna lie.
I agree. That one's pretty funny. And these are not euphemisms that I'm making up, you know, and they're not like. It's not like I know all of them, so I've been looking them up as well, trying to figure out, like, and I lean towards the ones that are like blanking the blank, you know, like those are the funny ones to me, like crashing the custard truck or
glazing the donut, I think was another one.
Yeah, there you go, stuffing the muffin, you know.
Yeah.
So like those are, I mean, they're childish and they're. Vulgar is not really the right word because they're not vulgar. They're just stupid. You know, nobody really talks about sex with these, you know, I mean, if you use these euphemisms, it's just the most childish thing ever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Which is why I wanted to draw them in like a little tiny picture book, you know, with like for kids, you know, it's like a very childish, like bright colors, simple shapes, little cartoon characters. And it's called like My First Book. Or my little book of sex euphemisms, you know. So I don't know. It's just like a cute little reference guide, and it's not pornographic. There's nothing graphic in it at all. You know, it's like it's just like if you were a kid and you had this and your teacher taught you with it. There's nothing bad in it. There's not a bad word in it. There's not a bad image in it. It's just that I think there's something funny about seeing them all lined up together in a book like that in a series. I think it'd be really funny. So I was trying to break the work up into a weekly blog, you know, and just like keep it rolling. But I lost steam after a couple of months or something. So I've drawn up a whole bunch more of them. And I think what I need to do is just draw them all and be done with it and make the book and bring it to space next year, you know. But give up the weekly blog format for this one.
Yeah. So I was going to mention, there was a book at your table at Space that got my attention. It's entitled, A Vagina Is Not, A Penis Is Not. Would you like to try to explain what this book is all about? I say like to try, like you don't know. I'm sorry.
I know. Like, I don't know if I can figure it out, man.
Would you explain what this book is all about?
I would. I'd be happy to. So it's two books, and they're bound back to back or upside down from one another. So you can start at either end of the book. A vagina is not starts on one side. And if you flip the book over, a penis is not starts on that side. And they both end in the middle. And it's a series of illustrations with a little bit of text captions under them. I worked on this with an ER doctor. Friend of mine who's an ER doctor, and it was his idea to do this book because he sees the same things come into the ER like week after week after week, you know. And it's not that he wants to like be, you know, judgy or anything. Like people do whatever they want to do, but like there's a lot of things that come into the ER that didn't have to be an emergency, you know. Especially when it comes to like reproductive health and sexual health, there's just people clam up about that stuff. You know, you get something weird going on down there, and you're kind of like, I'm not gonna tell anyone. I'm embarrassed. You know, I don't know what's wrong. I'm scared, and you don't say anything, and then it gets a little worse, and then now you're like, oh, now I really don't know what to say, and it gets a little worse, and it gets a little worse, and then you know you end up in the ER, but like knowing what to do when you first notice whatever the problem is that's helpful, you know, and that's kind of what his idea was, to make this book was let's make something a little casual where it talks about these real problems, you know, people can have like, you know, yeast infections or, testicular torsion, you know, things where if you talk about it, in clinical terms, people glaze over and don't have any idea, you know, what you mean.
Yeah.
And if you just sort of talk about it like out in the open, people are going to be like, oh, gross. We don't want to talk about that. So
right. Yeah. Yeah.
We tried to, you know, dress it. I keep saying dress it, things up. I'm not, that sounds like I'm diminishing it, but we would talk about things and say, like, for instance, a vagina is not a clown nose. So if it's bright and round and red, you know, go to the doctor.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. It's trying to take the stigma out of it, I guess you could say. Taking the stigma away from, like, some of the reproductive health issues that some people have.
Yeah, we're trying to get it to, you know, be presented in a way that's a little bit lighthearted, so you can talk about it. You can look at the pictures, and they're not gross. They're not past pathology photographs of, you know, diseases and things. Mm-hmm. It's like, if it says, like, you know, a vagina is not a clown nose, it goes, you know, the words, a vagina is not, and then a picture of a clown with a big red nose, you know? And mm-hmm. then it'll be a little explanation after that, you know, about, you know, what to do, or, you know, what you should think about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever, you know, and we tried really, really hard to make it not, especially as two dudes writing this book, you know, we didn't want it to come off like condescending, especially for the vagina half of the book. Mm-hmm. We don't want it to be condescending. We don't want it to be patriarchal. We don't want it to be judgy, you know. There's not a whole lot of stuff in this book where we say, like, don't ever do that. And we never tried to say, like, you're horrible if you do that, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but it's just kind of like, if you do that, know the limits of it. And we try to explain some of the limits of mm-hmm. things, like, you know, your penis is not a finger. So if you're going to put a ring on it, you know, take it off after a little while, you know, like, I don't care if you do that or not, but if you leave it on for too long, it's going to cause problems, and you wouldn't have to go to the ER and try to explain your cock ring if you just take it off after a little while, you know?
Yeah, gotcha. All right, let's move into the last couple books real quick I want to ask you about, and then we'll talk a little bit about yourself and where you started drawing and your inspirations in that. I would like to compliment that I, you know, looking through some of your work, Last Days of New Paris, to me, it has a real Jim Steranko feel to it, which to me is a compliment to you, Bruce, because huge fan of Steranko's work. I mean, it was really, you know, cutting edge back then in Marvel. So to me, it really appealed to me. So can you give us a brief summary of what that book is all about?
So Last Days of New Paris is a novel by China Mieville, which I adored it. I loved it. And it felt like a very cinematic novel when I read it right from the opening sentence. I was like, oh my god, you can see this, and it's, you can see this in pictures, and it's all about surrealist art in Paris, and then it comes to life back around World War II, and so it's just very, very, very visual, you know. It's all about visual arts, and then they're moving around interacting with these interesting characters and stuff, and I just was like, this needs to be, you know, it either needs to be a movie or it needs to be like a comic book. And so I put together like a 10-page little, it's just 10 pages of like a comic adaptation of a small portion of the novel. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of rearranged it a little bit so that it would not feel like it, incomplete excerpt, you know, but it's like a little introduction to the story and who the couple of main characters are and what their stated goals are. And then I did it all with, the comic is, it's all made out of collage, photographs. And so, which I thought was in keeping with the weirdness of the story, the sort of surrealist, aspect of the story. I don't think it would look right if you, you know, drew it as like a cartoon or whatever.
Did you get all these?
Well, yeah. Anyway, it was just a sample. It was like a pitch package.
Okay.
And I sent it off to his agent and his publisher, and they were both kind of like, "Yeah, well, I don't know."
See, I was gonna ask, did you get any feedback from the author? And so they kind of were a little hot and cold on it.
I didn't. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any feedback directly from the author. I don't know whether they showed it to him directly or not. His agent said
that it looked interesting and I should send it to the publisher to see what they say, and which is probably just them, you know, blowing me off. And then, so I did. So I went to the publisher and I asked them what they thought and said, you know, hey, his agent said I should contact you. And they said, we don't have any plans to make this into a graphic novel. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, I know. I know you don't have plans to do it. That's why I'm trying to, like, beat everyone to the punch here, you know, and, you know, pitch this to you. So I don't know. They were clearly just not impressed and blew me off as well. So
that's their loss.
No real motion on that one. But it's, you know, not that big of a deal. I did what I kind of wanted to do just to see how it would look and see what I could do with it. I do think I could do a really good job because I feel like I really related to a lot of the things in that story. I wouldn't just be some hired illustrator goon, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, you work for Dark Horse or whatever. Why don't you just do this adaptation of this novel? Like, I feel like this novel speaks to me in a way where I feel, I don't know if uniquely qualified is the right word, but I feel I could do a really good job adapting this thing into a comic book. And if I ever just had a whole bunch of free time, I might just, you know, do it regardless and then, you know, try to get it in their hands in a more finished form. It may change their mind when the work's all done, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about one final book here real quick, Tolliver Toad,
mm-hmm.
which is a book of yours. You want to give us a brief synopsis of that book as well here?
Sure. Tolliver Toad is a little hardbound picture book that I did. It's sort of an homage to the little Edward Gorey storybooks. I don't know if you've ever seen Edward Gorey books.
I have not. I've heard of them okay. being thrown out there, but yeah, so it's kind of a little homage.
He does little, he used to do little, you know, ink drawn, like black and white, tiny little picture books. The drawings were very meticulous and kind of surrealist and Edwardian, like people in giant fur coats and things. And the stories were always very, very bizarre, sometimes a little, you know, macabre or grim or whatever, and sometimes just surreal and strange, you know. And I love his little books, so this was like definitely just me creating an homage to that. It's he did a lot of his books are in rhyme, and you know, because it gives it like this childish sort of feel, like when you've got a sing-songy rhyme book, but then if you write about awful things happening, it's a cognitive friction that goes on there that I really like in his work. So it's sort of a rhyming book about a toad trying to cross a road, and it doesn't really go well for the toad. So it's a pretty simple little book. I think of it really as a children's book. Mine in particular is, you know, it's definitely a children's book. It's not gross. You don't see the toad get hit by a car. It's all very implied, and it's grim, and it's dark, but there's some layers of meaning in it. The very simple message of look both ways before crossing the street, if nothing else, you could take that away mm-hmm. from this book.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you. When did you first realize that you wanted to be an illustrator? Like, were you a little kid always sketching out things and drawing and whatnot?
Yeah, I was. I don't remember a time ever that I wasn't drawing, and I've known for as long as I can remember that I wanted to be an artist when I grew up. You know, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what kind of artist, and I never thought too deeply about what that meant, but I just always knew that that was what I was, you know, good at, and it's what I enjoyed doing, and I wasn't really sure what else I would enjoy doing. So I drew all the time. When I went to college, I went to art school, so I learned how to actually, you know, do good work and not just, you know, terrible work. And, you know, got a little bit of a focus in college and combined my love of science with my love of art and sort of moved into the world of science museums and natural history museums. And I used to do exhibits and models and things for museums for a while. And then kind of came back to scientific illustration and have been doing that for my day job for quite a while now, 15 years or so. Yeah.
So, who were some of your inspirations growing up when you were sitting down to draw? Did you have this particular mm-hmm. artist or that particular artist that really you were like, oh yeah, I want to be like him or like her or whatnot?
Yeah, I was really, really big into like the daily comic strips in the newspaper. I loved comic books, but I didn't collect them because I just didn't feel like I could afford to buy all the comic books that I was going to want. You know? So I loved comic books, and I was aware of the characters, but I was not aware of who the artists were or the writers or anything. So I'm mm-hmm. still playing catch up with who the sort of classic comic book artists and stuff are. Like, I know when you mentioned Jim Steranko earlier, I know what his style looks like, but if you asked me to specifically say like what comics he worked on, I couldn't do it. Oh. Like, I don't remember, but I'm at least familiar enough with the style that I know what his name means when it's said out loud. But I loved Jim Davis, Garfield, and I liked the Far Side, Gary Larson. Gary Larson's drawings are weird and crude, but they were perfect, you know, for the Far Side. I don't know that I was ever trying to mimic him in his cartooning style or anything, but definitely his sense of humor. I liked a lot of Calvin and Hobbes is, you know, I still look to Calvin and Hobbes for inspiration for how to draw things. Mm-hmm. Bill Watterson's art is just amazing. Well, I liked a lot of the weird, like the Wizard of Id and BC and Tumbleweeds and just like weird old 70s and 80s newspaper cartoons. Like, there's crisp sort of line work. I don't know.
Was there anyone that you didn't like?
Anyone that I didn't
maybe just
like.
From a content standard, you know? Because I always found Family Circus to be annoying. I just did.
It was very sappy. I didn't really relate to it or anything. I guess I didn't hate it. I didn't really. I felt like I used to like Andy Cap, like the way those characters were drawn, but I quickly realized I just didn't understand the humor. I didn't really think it was funny, you know?
Yeah.
The naggy wife and the lazy husband. And then on top of that, it was like British. And so there was just sort of like another layer. Like, I love British humor and I love British comedies and things, but there was something about that particular trope as it played out in Britain. Like, I just really didn't, I felt like I was outside of their house looking in the window, watching him beat his wife, and I couldn't do anything about it. You know, like, I just wanted, like, no. So yeah, I didn't really like that. I didn't get into the soap opera-y daily strips, the mm-hmm. Mark Trail and Apartment 3G and Prince Valiant and stuff. I was even Spider-Man when it was in like daily newspaper. I didn't want to read it three panels at a time and then wait a day for the next bit.
Yeah, right.
I wanted it to be, you know, if it's three panels at a time, I wanted to like have a punchline at the end, you know, mm-hmm. like I'm done until tomorrow. You know, I don't want to like have to wait to see, you know, what happens next.
Well, let's talk about, I know we talked about all of your particular books, but are there some other books published through Black Market Books that you'd like to highlight real quick that maybe people should check out?
Yeah, no doubt. They're all self-published by the authors, but I'm helping distribute their work. So I just wanted to be clear, I'm not publishing their work. This is all people who it's all creator-owned work, and I'm helping distribute it, but I'm not actually taking a cut of their profits at the moment. So it's a real good thing that we're all just kind of banding together. So Stu Race is a comic art a cartoonist up here in Plymouth, Canton. I think he lives in Canton, Michigan. He's got some really good comics, and he just won an award at Space this weekend for one of them called Refugee Road. Won the Space Prize. Yeah, it's a cool story about a woman growing up in lower class. Trying to escape the lower class, basically. A woman growing up in pretty hard circumstances and trying to get out of that. He's got volume one, issue one and issue two of that available. And one of them just won the Space Award down at the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo in Columbus. So it's pretty good stuff. He's got a book of comic strips about, he's a teacher. His day job is he's a, I think, high school teacher. And so he's got a book full of comic strips about funny things that happened to him in class. Funny things his students have said or suggested. And so that's a pretty funny book too. It's called Teacher Strips, like
okay.
comic strips, but it's also like, I don't know. I think he's going for a double entendre there. Teachers stripping.
Oh.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. he's got some really good work. He's very, very funny, and he knows how to craft a story for sure. So,
are those located at a specific place on the internet? The Black
they sure are.
Books?
Yeah, all the books are available on Gumroad, which is typically a website where people distribute their digital comics, but we are distributing physical comics through Gumroad. So it's gumroad.com/blackmarketbooks, and they're, all of our books are there. All of my books, Stu's books, we've got books by Cam Comics, Cameron Reynolds. He's a guy up here, lives in Ypsilanti. His work is very energetic and fun and exciting. He's got some stuff for kids and some stuff definitely not for kids. We've got a book by Fiora Kvitka, who lives in Pittsburgh, but her collected, she had a series of sort of diary comics from when she lived out west in the desert, called Dispatch from the Desert, and she collected those into a larger format comic, and I thought it would be really a nice thing to help her distribute. It's a fun little series of funny comics and thoughtful comics and diary stuff, kind of all in one volume called Dispatch from the Desert. So yeah, there's lots of good stuff on there. It's actually a little bit overwhelming because Gumroad doesn't really let you organize your page very well, so it's just everything kind of scrolls down this page.
Gotcha. And you said, sorry, you said that web address again was Gumroad.
Yep, Gumroad. G.
Yes.
Yeah, like Gumroad. Gumroad.com/blackmarketbooks.
And so, people, you should go over there and check that out. Bruce, your own particular website is www.sketchsketchsketch.com.
That's right. That's yeah, my personal website, and there'll be a link on there to take you to the Gumroad page too.
There you go. So you can check out all of his books available on his website. Let's see, social media. Where might folks find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on. You guys remember? Well, I shouldn't even mention it. Ello. Remember Ello? ELLO.com. It's sort of an artist platform. It's not a huge social media presence or anything, but it's a good group of artists on that page. So
okay.
I'm on there from time to time. But basically, Facebook, I can't seem to quit because every time I'm ready to like ditch it, some big book deal or something happens. Like they contact me through Facebook, so I can't even pretend to quit Facebook at this point. I have to keep it up and running. But Twitter's more fun.
Okay. And Twitter is @Bruce_Warden, WORDEN.
Right.
Are you going to be anywhere soon? Any other appearances? You were just down here in Columbus for Space, but you got any other appearances coming up in the near future?
I definitely do. I'm going to be at Cake in Chicago in June. I think it's in June. I should have the dates right in front of me, but I don't. So anyway, Cake is a big one in Chicago, Alternative Comics Expo in Chicago. That's a fantastic show. And this will be my first time having a table there. So I'm super excited to be at Cake. A2 CAF is the one up right here in Ann Arbor. A2 is Ann Arbor. So Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival. It's over Father's Day weekend. So that's in June as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be set up at the library here for A2 CAF. I've got, I'm going to do St. Louis Small Press Expo in August and then back down to Columbus for CXC in September.
There you go. There you go.
I think that's right. So that's the, upcoming near future.
All right. Well, Bruce, is there anything else you want to say here? So we're getting almost up to about 58 minutes here, so we want us to go ahead and kind of wrap things up. Is there anything else you wanted to plug or anything else you wanted to say to the listeners at home?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I have anything important to say. I don't have no overarching method message, eat your vegetables or whatever.
But, how about buy your books? How about that?
Yeah, you could maybe swing by sketchsketchsketch.com and take a look at my books. Go over to gumroad.com/blackmarketbooks and see what we've got available. This year, 2019, is the 50th anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival, so it's a real good time to check out my comic book Woodstock and take that trip down zombie memory lane.
All right, with that, Bruce, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. This was fun.
Oh, cool. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Bruce Warden, talking about all of his different projects he has going on. As I mentioned, I'm a big fan of One Drink. I'm also a huge fan of My Little Book of Sex Euphemisms. So check out all of his stuff by going to sketchsketchsketch.com. That's SKETCH. That's how you spell sketch. Sketchsketchsketch.com. And there's links to Gumroad and all of the other social medias that Bruce has. Again, he's a heck of a nice guy, so check out his stuff if you will. All right, well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I should let you know that you can get in touch with me a variety of different ways. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, and you can leave me a message over on the Facebook page of this podcast. That, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. Leave me a note. Let me know if you like the episode or not. And if you want to tell somebody where they can get their hands on this podcast, it's available a variety of different places. Obviously, it's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, but you can also get it through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, the Libsyn Podcast Player, the Echo Network, basically anywhere you find podcasts. All you have to do is search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to throw my name in there, PVDcast, John Orlando, and wha-bam, there you go. It'll be right there waiting for you. So, and don't forget to please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps me out, and I appreciate it. So with that being said, I'm going to get on out of here, so I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.